You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
All right, so 1 Peter 5. If you've been here through this series, you know that each week Peter has been giving this audience another piece of instruction or encouragement about the trial that they're facing, which is persecution. And rejection, that they're being mistreated by their community. And we've had, a lot that we've said about that. And last week was kind of unique because in the passage we read last week, Peter turned aside to just one part of the audience, which was the leaders. Remember that? He addressed the elders. And he was like, guys, as we go through this fiery ordeal, I have an essential word for you, a challenge for you. You guys have got to shepherd the flock. You guys have to lead through this trial. And that's what we studied last week. Lead as those who will someday share in the glory of Christ. And so now what's interesting about this passage, this is really the rest of that same thought, but he turns to a different portion of the audience. Last week he addressed the leaders. This week he addresses those who are under the leaders. He addresses the younger men, he says. So 1 Peter 5:5, he says, you younger men, likewise, be subject to your elders. And all of you, clothe yourself with humility toward one another. Because God is opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, so that he may exalt you at the proper time. Having cast all your anxiety on him because he cares about you. So this is, I think, an interesting little segment. And as you read through it, one word sort of jumps off the page, which is this word humble. It's kind of in every line here is this idea of being humble or humbling yourself. And I don't know what you think about when you hear that word. But it is always a virtue in the Bible. It's not describing something bad, like weakness or something like that. It's describing something good and virtuous. And the word, it's very simple. It just means to make low. It means to lower. And actually, all these terms in this passage, it's kind of an interesting way to study it. When you look at what all these words mean, Peter is definitely doing something here because they all basically either mean high or low. The whole passage. Let me show you. So humble yourself there, that means to make low. The first thing he says is subject yourself. Hupotasso means to put under. Put yourself under. Humility there. This one is that same word for low, but it includes the word for thinking. To think in a humble way. Humble thinking or lower thinking. Proud is the opposite. It has that word for thinking, but it means high, over, hyper. So you can underthink yourself or you can overthink about yourself. Here, humble just means lowly. This one means to make low. This one is just the word for under. And this one, exalt, is the word to lift up. So you see what I'm talking about? It's just high, low, the whole teaching. Don't put yourself high, put yourself low. Is essentially what's being said here. So this is our topic, to clothe yourselves with humility. And you're thinking, I'm so glad my spouse came, to hear this teaching. I know who I'm going to send this recording to. But you should probably hear it for yourself first. Clothe yourself with humility. One of the interesting things about this passage is that I think that it's kind of a surprising topic. When I study through this book, all the topics make sense for their situation of persecution, responding to slander, love your enemy, have a mind to suffer, right? That makes sense. Shepherd the flock through the difficulty. That makes sense. Here we are right at the very end of this book, and he's like, one thing you need in the fiery ordeal, make sure to humble yourself. That seems kind of surprising. Why is that important? And yet it must be because all of the other points in this book he argues, are essential equipment for the fiery ordeal. So why is humility, why do I need humility in my toolbox for getting through trials? And that's what we're going to explore as we dig through this passage a little bit. So the first thing that I want to point out is that the main point here is stated in the form of an illustration: to clothe yourself with humility. So take the attitude of lowliness, a lower attitude, and put that on like clothes. To gird is the word. Equip yourself. Put it, you know, wear this attitude of humility like clothing. And I think that implies right off the bat, you know, this is a command, so this would be a choice. It's not just a character quality, like you happen to be humble or you happen to be proud. He's saying when you wake up in the morning, choose for an attitude of humility. And that's important because I wake up in the morning clothed in pride every morning. That's why I just wake up like, oh, look, pride. But he's saying this is something that we can choose to don. Like, I'm going to adopt this mentality like clothes, like the clothes that I wear today. That is a choice. You know, my kids wake up every day and make a choice about what to wear. And sometimes it's a wrong choice. We're getting ready to go on vacation right now. We're packing bags for Michigan. And I said, Tommy, you got your bag packed? Yes. What do you got? I got this. I got a pair of shorts. I'm like, one pair of shorts? Yeah. All right. Well, it's 7 nights. We're going to be gone. Okay. He's like, all right, 2 pairs of shorts. And I'm like, also, it's going to be chilly. You know, how about you need to bring an array of different clothes? And, you know, he said, Dad, it's vacation. I'm not bringing pants on vacation. I'm just like, that's not a great choice. So there is something about what we wear that is within our control. It's you can choose wisely or unwisely. The other thing that he says here is that, interestingly, he says, clothe yourself with humility toward one another, that you're clothed toward people, which might seem kind of funny to say, but it's true when you think about it. You know, when you put on clothes, you're thinking about how you're going to present yourself. If you're going to a wedding, you clothe yourself appropriately for that wedding, and that's actually an outward directed thing. You are usually clothing yourself toward people, hopefully. And so this is his idea, is that adopt this attitude, but not just for yourself, in a certain direction, toward people. And so what I see as I look through this is there's actually 5 different things that he has in mind here in this passage, 5 directions in which we should clothe ourselves with humility. So that's what we're going to look at. And the first one is the most important and the foundation for all the rest of them. So the first direction in which I should clothe myself with humility is humility toward God, of course. He says in verse 6, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God. That my attitude, my approach toward God should be one of lowering. That I lower myself before God. That's because, according to the Bible, there is a created order of things. That our universe, our world, everything that's been created is created with order. Your body is ordered. You know, creation is ordered. And that includes some things being over, under things, some things being subject to other things. That's how things are made. And at the very top of that food chain is the one who created it all. The one who has the most special and unique authority is the author, the one who made it all. God is on top of everything. And so if I'm going to come forward and address God, if I'm going to turn my eyes toward God, then my attitude should be one of humility. That's the starting place. The Bible says that's the beginning of all wisdom, is the fear of God. The very most basic theological fact that you need that will start your whole understanding of God, and actually is one of, you know, there's only a few things you really need to understand God. And one of them is that he's God with a capital G and you're not. That's the beginning of it all. Okay? And when we factor that piece into the puzzle, it's amazing how many things fall into place very quickly. So he says, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. I really like how Andrew Murray says it in his book, Humility. He says, When God created the universe, it was with the one object of making the creature, that's what he calls us in this book, that we're the created one, the creature, making the creature partaker of his perfection and blessedness, and so showing forth in it the glory of his love and wisdom and power. God created us, and it shows his glory and wisdom and power. But this was not giving to the creature something which it could possess in itself, by no means. But as God is the ever-living, ever-present, ever-acting one who upholds all things by the word of his power, and in whom all things exist, the relation of the creature to God could only be one of unceasing, absolute, universal dependence. He created us, and our station is completely dependent on him. The creature has not only to look back at the origin and first beginning of existence and acknowledge that it there owes everything to God. I was created by God. Everything that I've ever experienced was spoken into existence, thought up by God. I owe everything to him. But also, the creature's chief care, its highest virtue, its only happiness, now and through all eternity, is to present itself an empty vessel in which God can dwell and manifest his power and goodness. You get what he's saying? What are you apart from God? Nothing. You don't even make any sense apart from God. The highest virtue and your only happiness is to be in a right orientation under God. Humility, the place of entire dependence on God, is, from the very nature of things, the first duty and the highest virtue of the creature and the root of every virtue. Do you want to live a virtuous life? Step one, submit to God. And everything else falls into place, is what he's saying. And of course, there is an other side of this coin, right? He says, and so pride, or the loss of this humility, is the root of every sin and evil. This is very stark, the way he's stating it, and yet it is true. This is this sort of central dynamic at the heart of Christian living. These two things in tension, pride versus humility, two different attitudes, two ways of clothing oneself. And the way I like to think about it is a solar system. You know, solar system is an ordered dynamic, right? It's set up in order. And the order goes like little things orbit big things. That's the order. If you have a lot of mass, you're going to have a lot of gravitational pull and things orbit you, and that's how it goes. Moons orbit planets, planets orbit the sun, and the whole thing is in order. And so I like this because that's kind of the idea of humility. What does it mean to be humble? It just simply means to be rightly oriented under God. To say, I'm not the sun, I'm a planet, so tell me where to go. This is my station, and this is where I belong. And I'll be happy and virtuous in this spot. To be prideful is to basically not be oriented under God. To be oriented like in any other way, that's pride. So if the planet says, I don't know, I don't like this orbit. I think I'm going to wander over here and off into space and find my own orbit. That's pride. If I say, you know, I don't like the way that this is ordered. I think big things should orbit small things. I'm going to orbit the moon. Or maybe Jupiter should orbit me. Maybe everything should orbit me. Maybe I'm the sun. And that's where it always leads. Pride always leads to the same place. Because if you're going to deny the sun at the central of the the middle of the solar system, if you're going to deny God, then you will be in search of a substitute. You'll be in search of some sort of order. And the next best answer is me, right? The next best answer is, I'll do it. Let's arrange it around me. That's the essence of pride. Oriented around self. So then what you get are these two completely different outlooks, these completely different ways of comprehending reality. You know, is this world oriented around something true and I'm a piece of that orientation? Or is this world oriented around me? Those could not be two different lenses. And they render divergent views of God, self, and others. Everything you see will look different through those two different lenses. Humility is rightly submitted under truth, whatever that may be. So the idea of what's true is that there's truth out there what things are right or wrong or true or false, those are out there whether I like it or not. And it's for me to discover that and get in line with what's true. That's the humble view of truth. But pride is always searching for a truth that will submit to me. What's my truth? What do I want to be true? And can I make that true? Humility is attracted to God, the orbit in which I belong. There's a part of me that craves to be in the station I'm made for. But pride is repelled from God. God is a threat to pride because it is a threat to my self-rule. I don't want to see that the sun shines in the middle of the solar system. Block that out. Resist that gravitational pull. Pride needs to establish itself, a self-valuation. You know, am I right? Is this the place I should stand? Pride is always got something to prove, because it has staked out its own station and is looking for that to be right. Whereas humility accepts God's valuation of me. What do you say, God, about me? Pride compares against others. It has to, because it has no reference point. Humility compares against God as the ultimate reference point. So what's important isn't how many people I get to orbit around me. I'm not the reference point. It's, am I in the appropriate orbit around God? Pride is restless and hungry and anxious, whereas humility is at peace. It's like, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. When we factor God out of the equation, we're left with pride as the only alternative. This is a fact of life. And I think that it pretty well describes the fallen condition of mankind. You know, why is our world the way it is? Because it's on a prideful pursuit. Because we've been, our world has been reduced to a giant arm wrestling match over power, right? Why? Because we're all out of orbit. And so this is the problem with humanity. That's why it says, he gives a reason. He says, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, because God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. That's quite a statement. If you want to stand up in pride and say, forget the sun, forget God, I'll go my own way, I'll create my own order to things, then God says, I oppose you. I have a problem with that. Because actually, there is true and false, there is right and wrong, there is something at the center of the universe, and it's not you. And I have a problem with that. God opposes the proud, which should scare you, because we're all super proud, right? This word for oppose is really strong. He's quoting from Proverbs 3:34. It's the word antitasso, which means to array against in battle. To tasso, that means to take the field. You know, when the Roman legions would come out and they would arrange themselves in all of their, their centuries or whatever, and they had their shields and their swords and they're ready for battle. That's the word tasso. Anti is against. So to array against someone, to come out in arms against you. God says, when you come at me with pride, I take the field against you. My armies rally. I am opposed, militarily opposed to your rebellious pride. And then there's a play on words here, because the word that he says in the beginning, be subject, is hupotasso. Same word, except one is to rally against, the other is to rally under. So do you get what he's saying? He's saying, either you array yourself under me, or I will array against you. He's saying, fall in, or my armies will fall in against you. Isn't the Bible great? It's got such saucy language. Yeah, I love that play on words. It's very vivid. God is opposed to the proud. God has a problem with human pride. It is an affront to him. C.S. Lewis says, the essential vice, the utmost evil, is pride. Unchastity, anger, greed, drunkenness, and all that are mere flea bites in comparison. It was through pride that the devil became the devil. Pride leads to every other vice. It is the complete anti-God state of mind. It is pride which has been the chief cause of misery in every nation and in every family since the world began. You can tell he's just trying to say that as emphatically as possible. So if pride is the root of all evil, then that must mean that humility is the root of all virtue. And I think that that's right. I think it's the beginning of a virtuous life. To acknowledge the awesomeness of God and then act in accordance in our attitude and actions. To wake up in the morning and say, I think I'll clothe myself with humility toward God because he deserves that. And that's going to rightly order my life. Acting out of a settled understanding of our place. I'm not contending for a higher station. I'm just right here under God, which is where I belong. Murray says, when the creature realizes that this is the true nobility and consents to be with his will, his mind, his affections, the form, the vessel in which the life and glory of God are to work and manifest themselves, he sees that humility is simply acknowledging the truth of his position as creature and yielding to God his place. That you've heard people say that humility is the essence of sanity. And that's a biblical point of view. I won't get into it because it's a side trip, but there's passages in the Bible that link this word humility with the idea of like being in your right mind, being rightly minded. In other words, it's delusional to say, you know, pride is delusional. Because it is inventing something that isn't real. Humility is being grounded in reality. I'm not God. Someone else is. And that is my posture. So God's opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. When we humble ourselves, God says, that makes me want to give to you. That makes me want to give you what you don't deserve. That's grace. The undeserved favor of God. And it says that God gives grace to the humble. I think that humility is our part that allows us to receive grace. You know, God wants to lavish good things on us. You know what gets in the way? You know what stops God from giving us blessings? It's our pride. You only need one thing to receive from God, but you do need it. The thing you need to receive from God, empty hands. Empty hands. But pride's hands are full. You know, you can't receive from God when you're busy trying to be God. But when we surrender, God says, I will give you everything you need. This is, by the way, the mechanic in salvation. This is the essential ingredient. When people make that once for all decision, that first decision to come to Christ, this is the mechanic where we come and we say, I can't save myself. I can't be God, and I can't even warrant your approval because I've fallen short of your standard. You're God, and I'm not, and that's a problem because I've screwed up. And I need grace. And God says, that is why I sent my son. I've done everything. I've paid for all the sin. I've reached out to you, and you can come and freely receive. What do we have to do to get right with God? Do I have to follow the Ten Commandments and give a lot of money and check off a lot of things? Do I have to do a lot of penance? No, you just need one thing, a humble attitude. Humble enough to receive Jesus dying on the cross for you. Ephesians 2:8, God saved you by his grace when you believed. And you can't take credit for this. It is a gift from God. So that principle, it's essential in salvation, but I think that it also remains relevant as we follow them. This should be our daily clothing toward God. Although our heart is always inclined toward pride, which it is, let's be realistic, okay? It is. But we can choose a posture of humility. This is an option I have, that I could choose to say I need to clothe myself with humility toward God. And when we do this, God takes notice and rewards us. He says, therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God. Why? So that he may exalt you at the proper time. When you lower yourself before God, he responds by graciously lifting you up. That is the great paradox, that he will exalt you. Peter, of course, is just simply repeating the teaching of Jesus. Jesus said this first, Luke 14:11, "For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." It's so much more clear the way Jesus says it. Lower yourself and you'll be lifted up. Lift yourself up and you'll be lowered. That's pretty much all you need to know on this topic. Peter's just expounding it for us a little bit. So, we should be humble toward God. There's more here, though. He says, "All of you, clothe yourself in humility toward one another," which means people. And I think that's where this passage gets much more difficult. Okay, it's one thing to say, you should humble yourself before God. I think even someone who doesn't believe in God could say, like, yeah, if there's a God, then yeah, that would make sense. Okay? But humble yourself toward one another, toward other people, that is a whole different story. Put yourself under other people. Have you met people? You know, they're not great. And you're thinking, like, surely I'm better than a lot of these other people, right? Come on. So this is much more difficult. And that's what he's got in mind, actually, in this passage, because he said, elders shepherd the flock. And now he turns to everyone else and says, you should submit to them. Younger men, likewise, be subject to your elders. So here's our second direction, is we should humble ourselves toward those who are over us. And I'm using that word over, using the language of the passage. In any situation, work, family, church, like in anywhere where someone has authority, how am I supposed to be toward them? Our attitude should be quick to humble ourselves. And that's tough, because I think nowhere is pride more evident than when it comes to leading and following. I mean, if you want pride to come out, just set up an arrangement where someone has authority over someone else. But the picture changes when we factor in God at the center of the solar system. This is the whole point. This only works when we have God at the center. Anytime a person has power over another person, it usually doesn't go well, because we live in this fallen world. You know, most of the examples we have of power, someone having power over someone else, are corrupt examples. So we rightly are like, I don't know, I don't trust that. Okay? That makes sense. But the picture here is the way God created it is that God's at the center and things are ordered out from that. So God created mankind. Mankind is supposed to have authority over creation. We're supposed to steward this planet that we have. It's not going particularly well, but that's the order that it's supposed to be. Human authority is a feature of the created order. In fact, in the depictions of heaven and new earth, it describes us there as having like responsibility, people ruling in different ways. It's part of how things are supposed to be. Now, it's broken because of our rebellion in the fallen world. But that doesn't mean that the design is inherently bad. Having a right orientation toward God allows me to take a right orientation toward others. This is the key, is that I'm not just saying, well, I guess I'll just be a doormat and let people walk over me. I'll just submit to anyone. I'm not saying that. And I'm also not saying, well, I'll submit to you because you're so virtuous. Because maybe you're not. But what I can say is, I will submit to God, and that means I'm going to adopt my place in the created order as best I can. That's going to be my prevailing attitude, is that sometimes I'll be in charge, and sometimes I won't be in charge. And when I'm not in charge, I should play that role with humility. Because I know how he's created the world with created order. I know that I'm not the sun, okay? And I know that he will exalt me at the proper time. So if it's that I should have been in charge and I didn't get put in charge, well, I guess I'll be exalted later, because he promises that when we humble ourselves, we will be exalted. It doesn't mean that I blindly follow authority, never dissent. It doesn't mean I become a doormat. It's that my prevailing attitude is one of intent to play my role in God's ordered universe, whatever role that may be today. So it's worth challenging yourself, you know. What are you like under authority? What's it like to lead you in various ways? You don't have to answer that out loud. You can just fight with that one in your heart. That's just a rock in your shoe for later. Another way to ask it would be, what would it look like to be clothed with humility when I am under the authority of someone else? That's a good question. You know, so what would this look like? I'm under authority at work. What would it look like? So I thought of a couple things. I think, you know, pride likes to say things like, I could do it better. You know, I'm under authority. I should be the authority. How often have you thought that? My opinion is very important. That's what the pride says. Humility says, you know, God has others in authority. So what can I learn from them? Maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong, but God's allowed it to be this way. Pride says, I'm not getting the recognition I deserve. Rank and titles are extremely important. Pride really cares about ranks and titles. Whereas humility says, God will exalt me at the proper time. I don't need rank and titles in this life. I'll get whatever ranks and titles God sees fit in this life and in the next. And he exalts the humble. Pride says, prove to me why I should submit in every single instance. The burden of proof is on you to convince me to submit. And also, how can I find fault with your leadership? Humility says, how can I encourage and pray for the leader's success? And how can I get behind their efforts? Hebrews 13:17, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account, so that they may do this with joy, not groaning, for this would be unhelpful for you. This is an interesting passage because it's loaded with the created order. You know, he's like, you should submit to your leaders for two reasons. One, because they have to answer to God. You see that? There's that order. Look, they're submitting to God, and that's actually a pretty heavy weight. Okay, you should make this easy for them, he says, by being easy to lead. And then what's the result? He says, this will be helpful for you. You see that created order? It would be better for you if the person charged with authority in this situation could do that easily. You would benefit from having the authority structure go well, is what he's saying. It's really interesting. Yeah, I think, you know, if you're someone who has, if you look back over your life and you're like, I have often clashed with authority. Like, this is a feature. It's, we all clash a little bit with authority. Some of us, like, really clash with authority. If that's you, okay? The challenge here is to say, all right, where is my pride factoring in here? Sometimes we do need to fight authorities. There is a righteous time to stand up and resist authority. But Peter's addressing here when it's our pride that's doing that, and that's causing problems. All right, well, if you hated that part of the teaching, you'll like this part better, because he flips the coin now. He said, notice this thing, submitting to your elders, it's a likewise. He's saying younger men do this likewise. Likewise to whom? Well, to the elders that he just described. So if you remember the passage last week, he's saying, elders, you guys need to lead with a certain attitude. And younger men, likewise, should be humble. That means that the implication here is that the elders should be leading with humility as well. That clothing themselves with humility should govern their leadership. And likewise, the younger men. And if you think that I'm stretching there, he makes it crystal clear right here when he says, and all of you, clothe yourself with humility. Elders, do this. Young men, do this. And all of you, clothe yourself with humility toward one another. So, this is our third direction. We've got, clothe yourself with humility toward God. Clothe yourself with humility toward those over you. And also, clothe yourself with humility toward those under you. When you are the one who has authority, you should wield that with humility. Humility is just as essential when you're leading as when you're following. What did Jesus say? What did Peter say in our verse last week? He said, shepherd the flock of God among you. And then he gave them this warning. Remember this part? He said, nor yet as domineering those assigned to your care, but proving to be examples of the flock. And he reminds them that they're under the authority of a chief shepherd. You yourself are under authority. You're trying to follow Jesus as a sinner, forgiven. And you should set the example of following Jesus, not domineering over other people. So, what would it look like to be clothed with humility when I have authority? When you're the one who's in charge? This is a good question too. What would that look like to have authority with humility? Well, I know what it looks like to have authority with pride. Pride says, guess that makes me the center of the solar system. You know, oh, I'm in charge? Great. Everyone get in orbit around me. Whereas humility says, no, I serve the chief shepherd by his grace. And I need helped and checked both by God and man. I need limited, I need held accountable, and I need helped by God and all the others around me. Pride says, my opinion is very important. And feedback is a threat to my authority. Oh, you don't like the decision I made? Well, now I'm threatened. And now we're enemies, and I'm going to make your life miserable to teach you not to do that again. That's pride. Humility says, man, I'm a fool half the time. I can't believe I got put in charge of anything. I relish feedback. Only God's opinion matters, and that may well come to me from those under me. God may well have a word for me for those who I shepherd. Pride says, my rank makes me important. Who am I when I wake up and look in the mirror? I'm the boss. I'm in charge. I'm the leader. And in pride, every outcome renders a verdict on my worth. Is it going well? Then I must be very good and valuable. Is it going badly? Then I must be very terrible. My identity is linked with how it's going, which is a miserable way to be. And also, what are the people saying about me? You know, are they saying good things? How's my reputation? Humility says, my security comes only from the grace of God. God has given me a stewardship to carry out in his name. That I'm here to represent him because he called me. It's not mine. It's that he's asked me to serve in this way. And keep in mind that prideful leaders, they can look domineering. They can also look timid, though. Sometimes the leader who's racked with insecurity and fear, why is it that we're so fearful sometimes when I'm in charge and I'm like, oh no, am I up? That's pride too. That's just, you know, pride can come out looking overpowered or underpowered. But insecurity, that just comes from pride as well, because what's missing? If I'm a very insecure leader, why is that? What's missing? Well, I'm not oriented. I'm not in orbit. Right? I'm out there trying to hold my own ground. And so God says, get in orbit and you can play the role that I have for you. Bringing our leadership under God's authority produces humble confidence rather than insecure pride. Humble confidence. That is not an oxymoron. Those go together. To be confident in my low station that I have taken. Versus insecure and tottering on the precarious station I've carved out for myself and tried to defend. Number four is, so we've said humble toward God, humble toward those under me, humble toward those over me. And here I just want to say that I think that he's trying to be as general as possible. Really humble toward everyone. Humble toward one another. And in the Bible, one another passages often describe how we're supposed to be in general toward one another as brothers and sisters. You know, the one another passages are famous. You know, forgive one another, love one another. You don't hear as much clothe yourself with humility toward one another, do you? That one gets forgotten for some reason. But there it is. In black and white, we need to be humble toward one another, and that's a general way that we should treat each other. In the fiery ordeal, you're going to need each other. I think this is Peter's point. He just argued in chapter 4 that one thing he says above all, most important thing, you need fervent love for one another. Love each other is the number one thing you need for the fiery ordeal. And I think then that makes this humility passage make a lot more sense. Because humility is the key to relationships. I would say that pride is at the heart of most, maybe all, of our relational problems. I realize that's a bold statement, but I think that's probably true. Murray says, consider how all lack of love, all indifference toward others' needs and feelings, the weakness of others, all sharp and hasty judgments and utterances, so often excused under the plea of being outright and honest, all manifestations of temper and touchiness and irritation, all feelings of bitterness and estrangement have their root in nothing but pride. And most of the things that really bug you about other people are manifestations of pride. Most of the things that are tough about you to be around are probably manifestations of your pride. Think how many of your recent conflicts, I don't know if you have any recent conflicts. Maybe you have to think back years to a conflict. I don't know. But if you happen to ever get in any conflicts, just dare yourself to think, like, what part did pride play in that? See, you don't even want to think about that question, do you? You're like, I don't even want to explore that. That's your pride putting up its armor. Why is pride so bad for relationships? I pondered this for a while. Here's what I wrote. I thought this. It's bad for relationships because it's overconfident and insecure at the same time. It has something to prove. It needs you for something. Pride is defensive. Pride is competitive. Pride can't apologize. Pride hates to be corrected. Pride won't take help. Pride can only see the other's fault and can't allow that it has fault of its own. Pride is afraid of you, of being exposed and embarrassed, so it can't be real. Pride makes you fake. Isn't that true? This was easy for me to write because I just thought about, like, what are the ways that pride gets in the way for me? Humility, on the other hand, were you trying to take a picture of that? Who were you going to send that to? That's my question. Here, just check out this slide. Anyway. I'll put it up at the end if you want. Humility, on the other hand, is the key to great relationships. Why? Well, all right, get your camera out. Why is humility better? Because all the opposite reasons. It's secure in its station. It's oriented in reality. It's free from the project of proving your worth. It's free from comparing. It doesn't need people to prop it up, but it can receive help. It doesn't need to hide faults or posture. It's not surprised or threatened by correction. It can own mistakes and ask for forgiveness. It's free from self-obsession and therefore free to genuinely love. Don't you want to be friends with a person like that? Don't you want to be a person like that for the friends that God's given you? Humility is the key to great relationships. So if there's a relationship in your life that's fraught, take a minute and ponder this before God. What can I do? And if you discover that part of the problem here is my pride, and this happens to me sometimes. I'm in a conflict with someone, and I'm like, I know I'm right. I'm convinced I'm right. I just also know that my pride is activated. I have to then go to God and acknowledge that. And sometimes what that means is going back to the person and saying, look, we disagree on this issue, but I owe you this apology that I know that I haven't clothed myself in humility toward you, and I have responded to you in pride. You don't get a lot of apologies for people responding in pride, do you? You really don't see that often, which is surprising considering how often we do respond in pride. Perhaps the need is to bring the matter in humility under the mighty hand of God. When a relationship is stuck, maybe we both just need to bend the knee to God and see what he does with it. All right, last point. He says, having cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Now, you could easily leave this off because it seems like another topic, but it's not another topic. It's right in the same sentence. He suddenly links in this new idea of anxiety, okay? And that is really a fifth direction. Clothe yourself with humility toward God, toward those under you, toward those over you, toward one another, and toward your worries. And that one is different because all the others are relational. But this is circumstantial. And it might seem out of place, but it's not out of place in this book. Because what's the whole time he's been encouraging them, they are racked with anxiety and worry. They are being persecuted and rejected. And he says, you know what you need in the face of your worries and anxiety? Make sure to humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. That's really interesting. To humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, why would that help? But here's the thing, I can tell you guys, as an anxious person, and I am an anxious person, I can get into the worries. I have learned that humility, choosing a posture of humility, really helps with anxiety. It really helps. How? How does humility help with my worries? Well, the reason is because what drives a lot of our anxiety is pride. You know what's really stressful? Trying to be God. That's really a heavy burden. You know, if the earth tried to be the sun, I bet it would be super stressed out and overwhelmed. You know, just not hot enough, right? Like, sorry, you just can't do it. And anxiety, it comes when we try to do all the things that God says, that's my part. If you read books on, you know, worry and anxiety, there's a lot of great advice, of course, and therapies. But two points that you almost always see. They say two things that every anxious person needs to come to grips with, which are uncomfortable truths that nobody likes, but they're undeniably true, and here they are. All right, so if you're anxious, here's two bitter pills you've got to swallow. Number one, accept the fact that you're limited. They say anxious people need to accept their limitations because what we want to do is we want to fix everything, right? We want to control everything. And so if I can just do it all, then I can just make everything right. But the problem is I can't, and so I freak out and get anxious. Accept that you're not in control. Number two is accepting that the world is an uncertain place. You can't know it all. And you can't control it all. Anxiety thinks that you can. If I could just figure it all out, if I could just anticipate every problem and get on top of it, then nothing bad would happen. But it's a lie. Because welcome to planet Earth, where we don't know everything and we can't control everything. We can know some things, we can influence some things, but a lot of things we can't. And so our anxiety begins to relieve when we let go of that. But those are hard to let go of. So how does humility help? Humility helps because having a God, and I mean God with a capital G, having God in my field of view really helps in accepting these facts of life. It's hard to accept that I'm limited, but it's easier when I realize, wait, there is a God who's unlimited. There's a God who knows everything and who really is in control. So it isn't just that I have to say the world is out of control. I just have to say it's out of control. It's out of my control. It's in his control, though. And that makes it much easier because I can now hand off those worries, hand off that responsibility to the one who can actually handle them, the mighty hands of God. And in the Bible, hands of God, that's always his power, his ability to act are his hands. When I was 18 years old, I had a terrible problem with strep throat and something else, and I had to have my tonsils removed as an 18-year-old, which wasn't very fun. And that had complications where I had to return three times that week and have it cauterized. And I'll spare you, you can use your imagination. It was terrible. It's as terrible as you would like to imagine it. And I remember the third time, going in the third time, I was so disheartened and exhausted and in pain. And my parents couldn't take me because they were at work, and so my grandfather took me. And I remember he took me there to the doctor, and he sat there while they did this procedure. And afterward, I was just sitting there sort of slumped over and basically despairing. And I remember that he didn't say anything. It was just quiet in the room, but he came over and he put his hands, his gigantic hands, on my shoulders and just stood there. And I always remember that because that really helped me. For whatever reason in the moment, you know, there was nothing that he could do, and yet that really helped me. And when I think about it, it's because I knew that he cared, and because that he was someone bigger than me, you know, someone who had been through more than me, who was like, I'm here. I think that that always comes to my mind when I read about this passage, to humble yourself under the mighty hands of God. Because the thing is, God, you know, my grandfather wanted to do something but couldn't really do anything. God can. He is in control. His hands are mighty. He has what my grandfather had, which is that he cares, but he also has the ability to act. He is in control, he does know, and importantly, he cares. And I think that's why Peter goes out of his way to include this point. Throw your anxiety on him. Your pride says, I'll take the anxiety. No, be humble and give it to him. His hands can handle it, and also, he cares about you. Such an important statement. Someone who is in control and also cares. And I think it's a play on words too, because anxiety is the word for cares. So give your cares to him because he cares for you. Give your worries to him because he's worried about you. When we leave our worries with the one person, we can leave our worries with the one person who can do something about it. So that's good. But if you've got something bothering you today, don't forget to take it to God. Why is it that we resist? I'll talk to 10 people about my problems. I'll take a nap. I'll complain. I'll do everything before I go and talk to God about it. Why is that? I know exactly why. It's my pride. It says, let me handle it. God says, let me handle it. And the faster you do that, the better you'll feel. When difficulties come, that's my cue. It's time to take up my place under the mighty hand of God. And I think this would be a great encouragement to Peter's readers who are in a situation they can't control, that they can't anticipate or control. Well, this is God's way, you guys. It's hard on the pride, but it is the way of truth and freedom and confidence. And I think that that's really true. I kind of joke that this teaching is such a punch in the gut, but actually, I just think it's tremendously freeing. If it's hard on us, it's only hard on the pride. All right, let's pray. God, I am really grateful for this passage. And actually, when I think about the freedom that you've given me in my life through these principles, the little bits that I've been able to appropriate them, it's been really life-changing for me. This is obviously true. And it's obviously the way. And thank you for your patience with us. You know how hard it is for us to swallow not being in your station. But we humble ourselves before you. We acknowledge you're our Father, you're our God, and you're a great and wonderful and gracious God. It's a privilege to serve you. Help us go with the freedom and joy that comes from a humble state of mind in our day today. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.